Before we get started, just a couple of housekeeping notes. The majority of today's conference is webcast, so I'm obliged to remind you of the and people online that there is a safe harbor slide. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but please take a look at it. And as well, we also will be having some company-specific disclosure related to the companies as they present. We are going to do one-on-ones a one-on-one conversation, fireside chat. I'd encourage everyone to ask questions. Please do wait for a mic so we can people on the webcast can hear you. Just so you know, the hospitality desk is on the other side of the floor. If you need any help, please go see those people. There are computers outside if you need to check anything. We aren't publishing books anymore. Everything is online, and if you need to download the app, you can find it at bmoapps.com/MTC. And finally, once again, just remind you that if there's anything you need from people, the desk is just across the hall. So I think with that, we'll get started, and I'll invite George Cope up. Morning, George.
Morning.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. Morning, everyone.
So, George, I thought we'd get started on the wireline side. One of the big strategic thrusts at Bell is obviously your fiber rollout. And why don't you, for some people who aren't as familiar as others with the Bell story, maybe you could review the plan and the rollout you're doing with fiber.
Yeah, no, sure. Happy to do that. One of the key differences obviously happening in Canada versus the U.S. is, there's a great market share growth battle going on between cable and telco here. And I think in the U.S., it appears at the moment the cable guys, like 100% of the net adds are cable. Our view as a telco is we've got to be in the broadband space, and we've got to be a key competitor in that space, both on wireless and on wireline. So on the wireline side, we have an 11 million footprint, household premise footprint, with some businesses in there. We're about 8.5 million that's fiber to the node or fiber, and we'll end this year with 3 million of those premises having or facilities having fiber right to the facility. I think most people know we're in the midst of a Toronto build. That fiber build rate to facility will continue every year, frankly, until we probably get to 80% of our footprint, almost the same 8.5-9 million. I think that's when we'll end, and that'll probably be, frankly, 8-9 years almost out before you're through that entire project. The build-out and demand capital is roughly about $1 billion of our capital right now, which, on a $4 billion capital base, is fine, and our capital intensity has been consistent, as people have seen over, 8 or 9 years if you've been following the mix, and we'll talk about capital a little bit here. So we're quite comfortable with that. I think it puts us in the right position in the marketplace, and ultimately, if you look at where the market's going, if you haven't done fiber right to the premise, I'm not sure how you're going to stay, one, competitive, and more important to meet the demand of the consumer for the access speeds that they need.
What is the revenue profile of the subscribers you're trying to attract with these new fiber builds?
Well, our strategy is really transparent. I mean, we have about 37% of the internet market today. Cable has a larger share from the historical technology issues. I think you could argue that telcos had. That's obviously changed with the fiber to the node, the IPTV, and now the fiber that we're installing. We see anywhere we have fiber, not just fiber to the node, but particularly where we have fiber, we see market share movement. For us, we see better churn, better operating costs. And ultimately, if you run any type of model, if we get to one out of two households that are with us relative to our cable competitor, that's a really interesting growth profile for us going forward. And clearly, one, justifies the investment, and two, if you don't make the investment, I'm not sure you have a broadband business left. So I think it's both offensive, and I think you could argue defensive as well. But it puts us clearly in a position as, from a speed perspective and demand perspective, we can be in the customer will want.
How do you approach capital returns then? Because presumably, as you go deeper into the market, it's going to be a more capital-intensive build, but there would be efficiencies of scale and I'm assuming equipment costs continue to keep down. So how do you think about capital returns over the long term?
Well, I mean, you know, it's we get asked the question a lot. I think one answer to everyone in the room is look at our return on capital the last 10 years under the stewardship of the company. So we know how to make money for shareholders. That's our track record. Secondly, our capital intensity number right now is lower, I think on a consolidated basis, than any of my core competitors here. So we've run that capital intensity well, and we're still growing, you know, growing share. I think when you get to that, you know, whether or not it's 8 million, 9 million, 7.5 million, whether or not that last 2.5 million become, you know, LTE advanced with whatever that evolution of technology is 3 or 4 years out, we'd have to stare that down, you know, pretty carefully. Obviously, the last 2 million premises are going to have to be some form of wireless solution because you just, these are some pretty big fields you're going to be putting fiber in that the economics just probably won't hunt no matter what we say.
In terms of your go-to-market strategy, you announced a change last week where you will, next year, customers will be able to buy internet or TV without getting one or the other. What brought about that change?
Yeah, we did actually announce that. And just for investors to know, I think we were TELUS and Bell Alliance and our competitors, they would allow you to buy, we call it 5TV, but their version of IPTV. You could buy it naked with just IPTV. We would only sell the TV with the pull through the internet. Really, just really a couple driving forces behind it. One, IPTV now is EBITDA positive, so we don't need quite that same pull through. Second reason is based on our knowledge of Bell Alliance, since we own it, the statistics are still, you know, 99 point whatever still want to buy both services from us, so we see a pretty low risk there. And thirdly, if someone doesn't want our internet service, then it opens the door into the relationship. I think that's where we may have been restricting the relationship. So although early on it was making sure we were funding that investment. So the timing works out. It'll probably be, you know, end of first quarter next year. We've got to do some transition issues to deal with. We pre-announced it ahead of time because there was also, you know, some issues in the TV market. We were getting some questions. Since we anticipated doing it, we thought, why don't we just announce it?
Right. I mean, one of those issues, I suppose, relates to the regulatory changes that are being phased in this year with respect to packaging.
Right.
Skinny Basic came in earlier this year. Doesn't seem that was that impactful in the marketplace. We go full pick and pay towards the end of the year. How do you expect those changes to you know, flow through the marketplace and how you're going to...
Well, it'll have more of a change in the market because you're adding more choice to the consumer. Again, you know, it's a really interesting thing. Most people's lives generally are so busy, they prefer to take, you know, A, B, C, gold, bronze, silver, whatever the marketing terminology is, and you put those packages in place. But, you know, on the penetration of some of our specialty media channels on Bell Media, there'll be some implications with those choices. We're kind of planning for it, plan to manage through it, and we'll see, you know, see how that unfolds. But are we significantly concerned with it? No. I think basically what we've seen is, anytime these multiple choice programs are put in place to the consumer quickly moves back to simplify this product for me, and that's what we've seen over the years, whether it's wireless or wireline on any of our programs.
Okay. The other thing you've announced is a few product introductions that are going to come through, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about those. That one of the more interesting ones, I guess, is Home Hub 3000. What's that going to mean?
Yeah, no, we're really excited about it because it basically gives us 3 times the improvement in the home for Wi-Fi. We think, you know, it's one thing to bring fiber into the home, but the bottleneck then becomes the home because everyone's on wireless. And so we believe this is the fastest modem out there in the marketplace. It gives us the ability to go actually above 1 gig speed. So, you know, there was this theoretical limit of 940 for those that didn't know until this product just came out. And so it actually goes beyond 1 gig for us. It also takes what have been 4 distinct pieces of hardware for our fiber installs, sometimes 5 if you wanted the battery, and puts it into one unit. So we've tripled the power, and we've taken 5 units for fiber installs down to 1. It also does fiber to the node. So it's either fiber or fiber to know the modem. So we're really quite excited about it. We've just launched it. Feedback's been excellent in terms of performance. And we think it's a big battleground. We think that, you know, the battleground is, one, into the home. The second is in the actual home. You know, I think you've heard us talk about it. I know my peers have as well. We've gone from 3 devices to now 12 attached to the home that's going to appear to the customer as the next bottleneck on performance.
You're also rolling out a wireless PVR this year?
Yeah, that also, you know, that's the first. We've had wireless set-top box, but our core set-top box had to be wired. We're now, for our knowledge, we're the only one. So now we can do an entire TV install with wireless across the board. So we don't have to, there's literally no cable anywhere that we have to fish the line and in the home. It's 4K, so capable of that as well. But most importantly for us, you take the modem and you take that device, you've improved the service for the customer, and you've taken install time down for us because it's wireless and the modem itself performs better. So moving the right direction, and of course, you know, our competitors aren't standing still, so it's part of our focus on making sure from a broadband perspective we're battling in this market share battle that's going on.
Right. So the consumer wireline side, there's lots of new products, and you've obviously got the major fiber builds. On the enterprise side, though, the signals you've sent to the street, is that still a bit of a more of a slog on that side? What's happening on enterprise?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and enterprise for us, we break it down into three groups, like the organizations like BMO, the real large enterprise, mid-market, and small market. Really, we have to look at all three distinctly. In the overall enterprise side, I mean, the move to IP combined with not really rapid job growth in the country on the large corporate side. I've talked about this continually. But, you know, if we're not seeing GDP north of 3%, it's pretty tough with the technology advances we and other companies are bringing into the market to see top-line growth in that space and with the migrations to IP. Mid-market, we're taking some share back. I think some of the competitive dynamics have been in our favor and some hard execution. But that's it doesn't move the needle much, but it helps. And on the small biz, having a better year than last year, I think that's probably got to do with just, you know, a little bit maybe of economy in Ontario, a little bit stronger. But overall, that's a work hard asset for us. You know, that's not going to provide us the top line growth that the consumer side is, at least not for the foreseeable future.
Do you feel you're losing any share to your cable competitors? On
well,
the SME side?
I think on the small. I mean, I think it would be disingenuous to say you don't lose some. I mean, clearly they're in that space. And they're competing with us now and, you know, with their cable plant. So that's probably the space that, you know, they work pretty hard at. But they'd have to make their own comments. In the enterprise space, it's, for us, probably much more structural than necessarily. I think we're maintaining our market share pretty positively there. In fact, we've had some pretty significant wins this year. We don't disclose to customers, but it's moved the right direction. So that business, you know, it's slow improvement. But, you know, we've got to refill it with other growth areas to offset that, for sure.
Great. The growth areas is wireless, so let's switch over to there. I mean, this year has been pretty interesting. You know, Bell continues to have some very strong momentum, but the entire industry in Canada seems to be pretty buoyant this year. How would you assess the wireless marketplace in Canada this year?
Yeah, I know it's definitely, you know, if we take up to the end of the second quarter, the very strong result, I think, for us, from our perspective, you know, we're trying to drive revenue growth and EBITDA growth. The people who followed our story, and we're doing that. We're taking a significant share of the industry revenue growth and EBITDA growth. And you know, that continues, as we saw through the end of the second quarter. We're particularly thrilled with the work we've done on the network side. We think that's making for us an enormous difference in the usage and why you're seeing the ARPU from us on an accelerated basis over the last number of years. I mean, I don't know who in here uses LTE Advanced with Bell, but, like, you're getting speed. You probably notice, like, do a speed test. You'll do speed walking down the street now at 50 to 100 megs. It's unbelievable. Like, we're literally, you just saw the speed test come out from PC Magazine that said our average speed now is 60 megs wireless. I mean, it's unreal. It's double the U.S. and significantly more than our competitors, our number one competitor. And really that's because we're doing spectrum carrier aggregation. We've been aggregating our spectrum, and that gives us theoretical speeds of 300, but practically you just get 50 to 100. We've done fiber backhaul to every cell site, and we think through carrier aggregation in the next 24 months, you'll see what's theoretically now 365 go to 600 feet. So you'll see effective speeds then of up to 100. As long as you have the fiber backhaul done and you do the aggregation of up to, we think we can get up to 85, basically of our spectrum band aggregated together. So we think the reason we're seeing this accelerated usage is it's an incredible experience for our customers. And we you know, there's always issues, but frankly, we're prepared to step up to it, compared to any network in the world from a wireless perspective. I mean, anyway, and we think that's why we're seeing the results on the wireless side.
What other factors are driving ARPU? Obviously, if you have a superior network usage and you know, there'll be bigger data plans and whatnot, but, you know, you've had strategic thrust to try and over-index in certain market sectors and whatnot. What else is driving ARPU at Bell?
Well, I think, obviously, there's the execution on the discipline price side. You know, sometimes it can cost us a little bit on the churn side, but we, you know, to make the investments we're making, you know, we have to also make sure that we're driving the right pricing structure in the marketplace. And of course, this year we saw with the Canadian dollar hurt, you know, there was some pricing action early in the year. I think that's made a difference. But, you know, overall, our distribution investments, I think, have paid off nicely for us. Our network investment to us, if you saw what we did in the Olympics, it really is now a big push just on the network superiority positioning. And frankly, if you attract those that use the network the most, by definition, end up attracting the most, the right customers. That drives the use. And of course, devices now, there aren't a lot of what we call Cat 9 devices, so that's devices that can use this full speed. So those devices are just slowly starting to come out now as well. And so to get the full benefits, you need the devices. And when the devices have that capability, usage goes up again. Customer uses more, experience with the customer is better, and of course we generate what we're here to do, which is generate more revenue.
You touched on churn briefly. You're a little higher than your peers, but the trend for everybody is a decline in churn. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, are you allocating efforts more to customer retention than customer acquisition now?
Given well, not, you know, we're running, I think, around 11.5 to 12% of service rate, somewhere in there on the retention spend. So it's getting awfully close to, I remember top ahead, somebody told me to this, but it's getting very close to the total retention dollars, all the people who pull back to the process off, but,
right.
But it's certainly close. I think, again, you don't want to, not a broken record, but for investors, if you're looking for what changed in our position, right, it's clearly, we think the turn for us comes down because of the network issue. I mean, honestly, if you leave to go to some of our competitors, you're probably going to come back from a network performance difference. It's that significant in terms of what we're doing. On the Bell brand, we see really, really excellent churn numbers. There's a real space because we have a mix of the Virgin and the Bell mobility in there. It's really on the Virgin side where you see a lot of, a little higher churn because that, you know, that's a little more of an aggressive marketplace. You know, you can call it the youth market, you can call it the discount market. You know, we compete there. And so that's probably where we see a little higher churn, but that's even down from on a year-over-year basis.
When you think about the market segments, obviously Bell, with your brand positioning and with Virgin, you cover the waterfront. What areas are growing and what is better than others? Where's the, you know, the juice in the market?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, for us, geography, of course, has been important because our history was here and in Quebec. And so clearly the West, even with some of the challenges in Alberta, you know, the West is still for us one of our better overall just growth markets because of the history of not being there the first 10 years. Ontario, we continue to do better in. This has been, you know, a strong position for one of our main competitors. They've had a strong position here. And, of course, Quebec's a you know, pretty competitive market because we've got the Videotron in the market. And that market, by definition, has always had has been a lower ARPU market. That's long before the fourth player.
Yeah.
Just no one seems to write it that way. But
yeah.
Reality is markets in Montreal have always been a $5 to $10 different ARPU than anywhere else in the country. We see that.
You touched briefly on handsets. It seems the handset market this year, though, has been relatively quiet. Obviously, Apple made a big announcement last week with the new iPhone. What are your expectations in terms of the new iPhone? Because that's always a concern for investors in terms of the replacement cycle. And just in general, what you know, are you expecting more dramatic handset releases, or do you think it's going to be pretty
incremental? I think that might be one of the reasons I should have mentioned. It's probably, investors see that. I mean, one of the reasons structural churn is probably down a little bit is the amount of handset change, the dramatic change in the handset that we saw 4 years ago just isn't as significant now. It doesn't mean each manufacturer isn't putting out new exciting handsets, or I'll get a lot of notes today, but it does mean you know, it really does mean the market is not as dramatic in terms of the change. So the upgrade cycle for the customer is not as fast.
Yeah.
And so obviously from our perspective, that's fine. And I think that has a little bit of churn implications and probably a little bit of the, you know, the cost of upgrading for us can come down if people hold the handsets longer. And I think that's part of the difference.
Right. You mentioned you're really pleased with what's happening on the network. I think you're about 75% LTE advanced now.
We should be close to that by the end of the year.
By the end of the year.
Might be more like 70, but right. By the end of the year. And then it's just keep rolling that out.
And so what's the migration path in terms of networks? I mean, are you going to start decommissioning some networks? And what's the path to 5G?
Well, like? Yeah, I mean, we'll have the HSPA underlay there for a long time because of the handsets that travel from around the world. CDMA, I mean, we've been turning some off over time, but it's really for our best sort of a yesterday story. The path for us is really on the LTE advances now. It is about the spectrum aggregation. So it's taking the same technology and taking it from 45 and then sharing it all the way up to 85, you know, band of 85 megs of your spectrum. That improves the speed. And then it's about putting the fiber, make sure you have fiber to every one of these cell sites. And, of course, the cell sites keep getting smaller. And that's why our fiber investment, ultimately, once we've done all these markets with fiber, we also will have, in one sense, an amortized cost base to then connect the other cell sites, which will happen, you know, when people talk about 5G, and I don't know if that's 5 years or 7 years, you know, how far away. I tend to always think it's going to be much longer than people think. But at the end of the day, the general concept of that next level is really just the next evolution of wireless. It's just shrinking cell sites even smaller and smaller, and fiber, you know, runs to every one of those, and ultimately having a fiber infrastructure underneath your network will be, I think, core to any wireless carrier.
Right. Have you any insight into the timing of the next low band auction?
I don't think I have anything to add there. I mean, we've really got to see how it unfolds through the industry, you know, processes with the government. It's certainly not coming tomorrow. It's not coming quick. That would be the one, and then we can all debate. You know, I don't know. Truly, I don't know if it's going to be in an 18 or a 19 time frame. Clearly, the industry is not under demand for a lot of additional spectrum right now because we had a pretty rapid fire auction process for 2 or 3 years there, and I'm sure from the investor perspective, they like it to take as long as possible as well because just, you know, cash off the balance sheet, and you don't use that spectrum for a number of years. So hopefully a little gets pushed out a little bit, but we'll see. I really don't have a date.
Right. And I guess the takeaway from that is ISED, the old Industry Canada, isn't saying anything to the industry right now.
Well, if they are, we're not saying anything publicly anyway,
right?
And, I mean, we're obviously working and we're following what happens on a global basis and on standards, et cetera, and how we get the spectrum back. There's a whole process to go through. But I don't, at least certainly from, I should speak only on behalf of Bell, it's not like we're pounding the table, got to have it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because we don't see that with all the spectrum that's been available the last couple of years. Look at all the spectrum that no one's using.
Yeah.
You know, people who bought spectrum in the auction have never done anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit on it for speculation reasons. So, you know, we certainly don't need another auction in the meantime because of that sitting there.
Maybe a couple of quick words on media. I know it's a small group at Bell, but what are you hearing from your media people? You've done a lot of restructuring there. You've changed it out, and it appears the financials have stabilized at that point.
Yeah, no, I think we've done well. Certainly relative to our peers, we've done well. But it, you know, it was pretty painful restructuring we went through last year from a cost perspective, and that put us in the position to you know, I think have a fairly healthy year this year. You know, it is the diversification of that portfolio that's pretty important. You know, whether or not it's like our outdoor business has now grown to be number one. We have 33,000 outdoor locations. We secured Toronto Airport, a number of other airports over the last couple of years. Our radio business with our TV and then our over-the-top business, well, you know, gives us a consolidated portfolio. So when we're putting campaigns in place of the advertiser, we can bring about, quite frankly, a portfolio that no one else in the country can bring from an advertising perspective. So that is really how we're trying to position the asset. And then, of course, you know, you watch us in the OTT world with some of the HBO content and the Showtime content. And, you know, we're our whole Crave product is working the way we want it to work and competing. in the marketplace adds to our TV portfolio. So, you know, it's done fine. Nice cash flow off that business. Fits for us strategically, very importantly, because of our requirements to purchase a lot of content for our own TV business. We're purchasing, you know, X percent of that from ourselves. And also our ability to position that product in the marketplace such that our specialty channels can be moved forward is important as well.
I'll put it out to the audience. Please wait for a mic, but I'm sure some of you have questions for George.
Morning. I think the case for fiber is that compelling, the ARPU, the churn. Why not roll it out more aggressively like one of your peers who are kind of echoing the same advantages? Are there competing sources of competing uses of capital which provide better returns? Or?
Well, if I bring in one of my executive meetings, I can assure you there's a competing always battle for capital. No, you know, from our perspective, look at our pace, right? We're going to end the year at 3 million. We see the markets where we've done the fiber. It is an enormous project to what we're doing in Toronto and the pace of resources to get that project done. So we think it's prudent to have an annual number that people are seeing now that we're doing in Toronto at around $1 billion. Clearly, you know, when I talk about 8-9 year program, it doesn't mean something couldn't get accelerated to 5 or 6 if the returns were there, et cetera. But I don't see that. We also, with our fiber to the node, we see that it's competitive with our TV product. And so we're really doing the fiber now because we know where the market is going to be. I mean, you know, complete transparency. It's not like all 3 million of our footprint customers could use 1 gig tomorrow. They're not using 1 gig, right? They're not even buying 1 gig, very few are, because people don't have that use for it today. But we're really positioning to where the market's, you know, going to go. And the real challenge is we couldn't do fiber overnight 6 years from now and say, oh, now we've done fiber. We've got to get it built now, and it's nice positioning on the way through. And then we're pretty disciplined in our capital markets approach. It's very transparent. You know, you can look for our wireless business to be, you know, 10 to 11% capital intensity in 17, and it's been for 9 years, so that's not shouldn't be a big surprise. We've certainly been there the last few years. The media business runs at 3 to 5, and the wireline business runs at 23 to 24. Capital intensity and keeps our overall intensity around the 17.5. And so, you know, that's really our view on why we're doing it at this pace. So thank you.
Any other questions?
I guess I'll go first. Any concerns about leverage? Still a little bit high over your target, recent downgrade. Anything to add along those lines?
Well, you know, for Moody's and S&P, it's been the same ratings we've had for years. I think you're talking about DBRS. I mean, the next day we raised capital at the lowest rate in the history of the company, lowest interest rate in 135 years. So, you know, I think the capital markets spoke volumes in terms of that order book and confidence in what we're doing. But in terms of our leverage, you know, we are, you know, our use of capital is pretty transparent. The dividend growth model, deleverage back down towards the targets we have publicly out, and tuck in acquisitions as required to execute our strategy. You know, like something like the Q9 we just did to complete it. But I think the investment community can be pretty comfortable that, you know, the ratings we have now is where we absolutely plan to stay. And if anything, you'll see us deleverage over time. We certainly would be deleveraging before we'd be doing stock buybacks or something. There's no doubt about it. But our focus is the dividend growth model, the tuck-in acquisitions, deleveraging, and then obviously dealing with whatever pension things come our way. And we raise money at the historically low rates. There's a good side of that. And if you have a big pension like us, there's another side of that. So, you know, there's never a perfect world out there. Thanks for the question.
I think if you ask any Canadian, they'll say their bills are too high in the telco sector. But can you just talk about how the delta has changed there? Are customers pushing back on price or is there still opportunity to continue to raise prices?
Well, I don't know if I agree with your point, first of all. I mean, I think relative to the U.S., our wireless pricing and our broadband pricing, TV pricing in Canada is $20 lower per customer than the U.S. Average TV bill in the United States is $90. Average TV bill in Canada is $65 to $70. So I don't think that's an accurate statement to make the statement that Canadians would say our prices are higher than everywhere else. Having said that, our telecom service is a huge demand from the customer marketplace, absolutely. you know, for sure. We see that in the marketplace. But really what's driving the demand has been the, you know, the improved quality of the networks and therefore the usage. I mean, there are markets where prices are lower. And if you try to download a video on your wireless handset, you'll wait a week. So, you know, there's a trade-off between quality and expectation for revenue generation. And Canadians, I think, have spoken loud and clear. They want broadband leadership in the world. And with that comes a similar type of pricing that we see in the United States, not pricing in markets where capital intensity runs at 8%. And, there, you know, I was in a market the other day where I went back to edge wireless technology. Like, some of you may not even remember that, but that's five levels, and there was, got off a plane, I saw that, and I said, okay, well, that's probably why wireless pricing is where it is. So, you know, you can't have one without the other, but obviously we've got to say, generally, we look at the U.S. as where we've got to make sure we're competitive in the marketplace. To make, if you look at the economy, it's so close, and then, of course, you have exchange issues, which haven't helped us because the, you know, the dollar's got weaker.
Last chance, anyone else? All right, I think we'll leave it there. George,
great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you again, George.